From KCRW, this is DNA, Design and Architecture. I'm Frances Anderton. COVID-19 has brought many people pain and anxiety, but it has also brought clarity.
This global city, which is basically an elite of people traveling from a historic center to historic center, or from shiny financial building centers to financial building, with a contraction like this, it's suddenly revealed that these are zombie cities. They do not really exist.
This is Wouter Vansterpout. He's an urbanist and he teaches a very interesting subject at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands, design as politics. Yes, design as politics. And I went to him to talk about cities as politics, cities as built expression of our economy, our culture, our values. All of these have been thrown into question by the coronavirus and the global halt in our usual lives, especially the globe-trotting lives of many designers and architects. This conversation is part of a series on DNA about our homes, our workplaces, and our cities post-pandemic. Wouter looks at the big picture. What has this pandemic clarified for you?
Two things, which are seemingly unconnected. The first is that we need a very, very strong public sector. We cannot do without a very strong public health system, but also social benefits system. We cannot do without good unemployment benefits, without a real public system of support. The other thing is, probably in Los Angeles, the sky must be beautifully open and clear, and you could see the mountains. Now, the place where I live in Rotterdam, we have the most polluted air in Europe, next to the north of Italy. And suddenly the air pollution is much and much less. So the other thing that this pandemic has clarified for me is that the current economic system that we have is incompatible with our health and with our future. Because you could say, look how we can clean up the air in a matter of weeks. But we can't clean up the air because nobody would have been able to do this. It is only through force majeure, like a pandemic, that we are forced to do it. But the glacial slowness with which we are realizing the effects of climate change and the extreme, I think the failure basically of most countries to do something about it is because they are so reliant, nearly addicted to a fossil fuel economy. And I think the fact that our economy is now collapsing, but the environment is cleaning up, proves that our economy and our environment are incompatible. It's either one or the other. Either we save our current economy or we save the environment and ourselves.
But the point is, you say the current economy, suggesting that the economy has contracted. And if we were able to live in such a way that people had a livelihood within a contracted economy, the world could be a better place.
Well, that's precisely the point. That's exactly the point. The fact that we cannot contract our economy without damaging the lives of millions of people points to a very, very fundamental weakness of our economy. And that's even besides the environmental costs of our economy. It is also that our economy, it's a boom and bust economy, not just on a macroeconomic scale, but also on a personal scale. Either you go boom or you go bust as a person in this economy. And people started losing their jobs a week into the lockdown. So it's, and that shows how incredibly brittle and damaging our current economic system is, even in Europe.
one of the aspects of contemporary life whose weaknesses have been exposed by this pandemic is the so-called global city. Tell me about that.
I think the global city is the way that it is global right now. It's based on this idea of that cities need to compete with each other. So there's a global marketplace and cities are players in that global marketplace and they compete. They compete for tourism, they compete for corporate headquarters, they compete for festivals, they compete for the Olympics, for the Eurovision Song Festival, which was supposed to be in my city next week. They compete for football championships, etc. And they compete for the best expats, their universities compete for the highest rankings, everything competes for everything. And that, of course, creates in some, that also creates an obsession with growth. It creates an obsession with a race to the bottom for some things, in which my country is very, very doing very badly with. For example, Holland is basically a corporate tax haven. And I think this whole mentality of the global city has a face. It has an image or a skyline, if you will. It is this skyline or this shiny skyline of the CBDs, Dubai, but also even parts of Amsterdam and Rotterdam all look precisely the same. The same kind of architects competing for the same jobs. And the global city is also, funnily enough, the museum city, the tourism. You see that the center of Amsterdam found itself actually without any citizens as soon as the tourists were gone. There are friends of mine who woke up on the first in the lockdown and they found out that literally all the flats in their street and the street beyond and the street beyond that street were actually all Airbnb. So nobody lived there, absolutely no one. And the street level was all dedicated to tourism. Nobody there either. So you can see that this global city, which is basically an elite of people traveling from a historic center to historic center or from shiny financial building centers to financial building, with a contraction like this, it's suddenly revealed that these are zombie cities. They do not really exist. They are not communities. They are not urban in any classic sense of the word.
But your insight about the Airbnbs is so fascinating. Even as you and I are able to have this conversation and tape it, thanks to some of the brilliant innovations in digital technologies. At the same time, are we seeing also some of the darker sides of those digital technologies, such as the way in which Airbnb has sort of essentially gouged out our cities?
Yes, but Airbnb is a very, very direct, is very directly culpable, you could say. But there is more, because I think the whole digital revolution you cannot separate it from the whole gig economy, because basically Airbnb is an app. That's all it is. It's a platform, and it's a platform where people could sell their own hours in their own couch surfing is how it began. So it's an app that kind of monetizes behavior of people. But it has done so many different other things too. It has Uber is of course the same thing. There are so many of these things that used to be jobs, jobs that gave you a living wage, that have now been reduced to gigs. And this is of course extremely attractive. On a personal and temporary level, but I think now we see it coming right back at us.
What's the upside of all of this? You say that you're pessimistic about certain aspects of what this pandemic has revealed. Are you optimistic as well?
Yes. I'll try to give you my optimistic view, despite that I try to suppress it. The optimistic view is, of course, that this moment of clarity, that I'm not part of a minority in having it, that this moment of clarity about, oh my God, we really do need a strong public sector. Oh my God, we really do need clean air. Oh my God, we are so dependent on industry and travel. This is, my optimism would lie in a kind of cultural mood change, that there would be a change in the way that people regard their own connection to the economy and to government. Another thing that I hope is that, and this is more direct, maybe something that could happen within the first years, is that there could be a sort of a shakeout also of a lot of things that to me have gotten completely out of hand, like the tourism industry. I really do hope that these cruise ship companies really do not recover from this. I really hope that the cheap flights and the mass jet travel does not recover from this. That I really hope that the Airbnb does not recover from this. At the same time, I know that there will probably also be a whole bunch of really good things that also might not recover for this, but then at least let some of the bad things also go down.
It's very interesting, this question of tourism, because obviously on the face of it, tourism is an innocent pleasure. But we've already seen that there are cities, certainly the historic cities of Europe and in some other parts of the world, that are literally collapsing under the weight of tourists. Rome and Venice. And so again, are we seeing this pandemic in a way sort of clarifying or making visible challenges that were already there, but we hadn't kind of pieced them together?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I would say that a lot of the problems that we have been talking about for the past decade or decades even, first, the fossil fuel economy. Second, for my country, very important, mass poultry farms, mass pig farms, etc. These things we have been talking about them and saying they are bad, we should get rid of them. We've been talking about Amsterdam, Venice and Berlin and Paris and Rome collapsing under tourism. But every time it's been very difficult to even go forward a couple of inches. Because every time there was this other argument against it, yes, but the economy, yes, but employment, yes, but how can we phase this out gradually, yes, but etc. So every time we got stranded in a kind of negotiation about these things. It is only now that we see what happens, because the cities needed to suddenly lose all their tourism or tourists, for example, in order to see how these tourists had hollowed the cities out. So things have become undebatable while before they were being debated. And that, I think, is hugely important.
Let's take this conversation back to a city that I am in and that you know, Los Angeles. LA itself has worked towards becoming a global city. On that path to becoming a global city, it has maybe lost some of its regional qualities. Do you think that this pandemic is also kind of making the case for regionalism?
Absolutely, yes. In many ways, of course, I hope and I think that there's a good chance that this pandemic also sort of emancipates the citizens of Los Angeles, and that they say, hey, it's our city. Cities en route to being a global cities, it's always about kind of bypassing the citizens, because it's not about them anymore. The city becomes a product. The city becomes a destination. Everything, the people who actually live there are, except a tiny elite, of course, are a kind of a nuisance in a way, because you have to explain everything to them and get it past them. So I hope that this pandemic will emancipate the citizens of Los Angeles, and because they will start thinking of a better world, because that is a nearly universal effect of a crisis like this. It gets people to think about a better world. But the other thing, there are also very rational and direct, objective reasons for a more regional approach to a city rather than a global one in the wake of this pandemic, because this pandemic and the speed with which it has spread is, of course, a function of globalization. But I also believe that this pandemic, the difficulty that we have had to contain it, also says something about the scale on which our cities are being organized right now, that hospitals are always gigantic and far away. A regional city also means a scaled down city, a city of neighborhoods, a city that knows where its food comes from, a city that knows where its water comes from and takes some responsibility for that. A city that tries to think about the nature around it. Yeah, I think that this should bring the regional city back into view and unmask the global city as something that is actually destructive. But there's one very sore point that you just touched, and it's we very rarely, because I mean you and I were both part of this kind of design, art, architecture, culture community, and we are such awful global citizens too, aren't we?
Yes, yes.
I mean, the way that we just fly over the world and go to a festival or a biennale, or it's horrible, actually. There's people in from Holland that I only see in Venice.
Yeah, and I did actually talk to some interior designers who were, you know, upset that Milan, Salone had closed. But at the same time, they did acknowledge, they said, you know, we jump on and off planes the whole time. We go to these art fairs everywhere. And they were saying, you know, perhaps we don't need to go to every single one.
It's a weird world, this architecture, culture world. But anyway, we have time enough to navel gaze, I guess.
Well, Wouter, I hope we will, and I hope with provocations from people like you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Wouter Vanstepout. He's an urbanist with the Crimson Historians and Urbanists, and he is Professor of Designers Politics at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands. I'm Frances Anderton. Thank you for listening to the DNA podcast. Stay tuned and stay well.